Blog Talk Radio.
Article 7, Section 3 allows for a citizen filibuster. If I stand here and refuse to yield my time, you are prohibited from voting on the bill. Let the filibustering begin. As many of you have noted that use the internet, it has been announced that Disney has required the rights to the Star Wars franchise, and in the summer of 2015, we will see the release of Star Wars Episode 7. Herewith is my proposal for the plot of that movie. Begin with standard title sequence and John Williams fanfare, followed by a scroll to be written. I would like to mention that Brian De Palma wrote the original opening scroll for Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope. I think it would be a nice nod to the franchise if he were to write this opening scroll. Then, pan down from the twin suns of Tatooine, we are now close on the mouth of the Sarlacc pit. After a beat, the gloved Mandalorian armor gauntlet of Boba Fett grabs onto the sand outside the Sarlacc pit, and the feared bounty hunter pulls himself from the maw of the sand beast.
Okay, this is exactly...
And we realize that he survived his fall during the battle at Jabba's palace ship. Oh, then do a hard cut to a repurposed Imperial destroyer, which has now been taken over by the rebels. Commander Luke Skywalker, now a full Jedi Knight, training new Padawans, is using, ironically, his father Anakin's red lightsaber, which will be a symbolic, I think, visual for his battle with how to both bring about the new Jedi Order while still acknowledging his father's fall from grace. As he is training the Padawans, we pan outside of the control window to a nearby asteroid where we see, and please allow me to finish this because it's going to seem like a bit of a jump, we see Thanos, who was the villain teased at the end of the first Avengers movie. Now, Thanos, as you know, owns the Infinity Gauntlet, which has the time gem, the mind gem, the power gem, the space gem, and the reality gem. If he holds the reality gem, that means he can jump from different realities. This will be our link to the Marvel Universe from the Star Wars Universe. We then cut to Earth. Tony Stark realizes that there is... Tony Stark realizes
that
there
is...
Tony Stark...
I know who that is.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Afternoon Radio. Folks, that was the infamous viral rant of the great Patton Oswalt from Parks and Recreation. Man, first of all, I'm late. I'm late. I knew of this. I knew of it, but I never actually sat down and watched it. It is genius. He is a genius. I think at this point he has been dubbed appropriately King of the Nerds. I think I might have to agree with that title. Mr. Oswalt, I think, deserves King of the Nerds. And you know what? I want to see that movie. I want to see that movie that he has so rightfully proposed. Folks, again, the Comic Shop, this is the Grindhouse. We're going to go to a quick nerdcore groove. And then we're going to discuss the obvious, Mr. Stark, Part 3, Iron Man. Let's get to it. This is The Rap Viper by The Word Burglar. More nerdcore, folks. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
Viper was flying rattlers when you could still smell my diapers. Lyrical sniper delivered without obstacle by Dr. Venom at Cobra Island Hospital. Diabolical, my style deadly like a lobulus. Speakers on my back, me a rapper, synonymous. Major blood got me into writing poetry, riding hydrofoils when the eels used to flow with me. And now they know it's me, every single place I go, rallying the troops, getting play on Cobra Radio. Sonic Fighter, my primary specialty is that I rhyme very freshly. Rap Viper, never spit blanks. Play me from the fang to the bug to the hit tank. String deal to the Cobra Citadel. Across the globe, and you know I give them hell. Rap Viper, never spit blanks. Play me from the fang to the bug to the hit tank. Cold Slither in the Cobra Citadel. Around the globe, and you know I give them hell.
All right, enough of that. Once again, Rap Viper, by the Word Burglar, giving the best of nerdcore music, folks. This is the Comic Shop. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Feel free to buzz on in with your opinions, your protestations, your questions. The water is warm. Of course, I have the Podcast Avengers, my own Podcast Avengers, my own or our own Enterprise crew on the podcast tip. First up, of course, the captain. Captain Kirk, it's your time. Let's get to it.
Reality Gem, right here. Boom. Thank you.
Yeah. And, of course, the indefatigable Daryl B.
Ah, just an awesome, awesome experience the last couple of days. My
Definitely.
Thanks to everybody involved, and we're going to get to the movie in a second.
Yeah, well, exactly, in a second. Folks, obviously we're going to talk about the third iteration of the Iron Man franchise. I believe Mr. Downey has done it again. Let's unpack it. Daryl, what were your thoughts, man? Shane Black, he's behind this thing, directed it. What are your thoughts about Iron Man 3?
I'm conflicted. I was entertained. It was funny. It was dark. I was very entertained. The problem is the nerd geek part of me that's followed Iron Man for a long time was screaming, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't. Without spoiling too much for the folks, you know, if there's Iron Man diehards out there, you know, who go to see this movie, they will pick the thing apart. But, you know what? If you read Extremis, this was very loyal to that. They made tweaks in it, yes. And what they substituted his alcoholism with, that psychologically crippled him, made perfect sense. PTSD. Anybody PTSD? I mean, that is essentially what Tony Stark has. And as a superhero, that's probably the worst thing you could have before going into a battle or going into plan something, because that cripples you. And, hey, I enjoyed it. Like I said, the geek side of me saw with the changes they did to Mandarin, saw what they did with AIM, saw what they... And I'm just like, no. But you know what? A non-comic book fan goes in to see this, who just likes to watch the movies and stuff. I don't see how you can't be entertained by this. And the after-credits scene. If you didn't like the after-credits scene, then you have no heart. You have no soul. You know? I mean, that captured both characters perfectly. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I'm going to weigh in on this in a moment, but I want the captain. He was with the Inner Sanctum, as was I. What are your thoughts, man? I mean, we saw this as a group. I was thoroughly entertained. I like Darrow, I had some reservations, not many. But if you are familiar with Iron Man lore, Iron Man mythology, you know, if you're wedded to that, there's going to be issues. The first Iron Man, you just virtually had none. It was very, very, very close to the initial 1963 outing of Iron Man. I'm not so sure about this one, but I enjoyed myself. I felt there was definitely a redemption between Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3 as far as having an even-keeled feeling after the movie. So what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, the people that go see it, I recommend don't bother with the 3D. Go see the regular version.
Right? Yeah, we agree with that. 3D is not needed for this.
Yeah, not needed for this. Don't bother with that. I think definitely this version was better than 2. I don't think it was as good as 1. I always said 1 was a must-see. I thought it was very entertaining. Very entertaining. You know, there's a few things in there. I do not want to spoil it for the listener. But I had a big problem with the way they portrayed and what they did with the storyline for his Mandarin. That was bothering me through the whole movie. But other than that, I thought it was very entertaining. It was not as good as the first one, in my opinion, but it was definitely a lot better than 2. And some people might say that's not hard to do, but it was definitely entertaining. You know, I think people should go out and, you know, check it out and see it. You know, and that's about it. There's not really much to rip up with this. You know, there's not really much to rip up other than, you know, the problem with the Mandarin. That was a big problem with me. It was like pinching me all through the movie. But other than that, there you go. That's it. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, but that aside, can we all agree that Ben Kingsley can knock out any role he has? It's just we expected the Mandarin.
Well,
the person I thought was Mandarin, but yeah. Go ahead,
well, I thought, and not to give out too much information because the movie is still very new, but I thought that his initial, you know, before you got the turnaround, and I'm going to be very vague about this. Before you got the turnaround, the way that he was acting was very much the Mandarin. And I was disappointed I mean, as much as I thoroughly, and I don't want to take anything away from the movie as far as entertainment value goes. The entertainment value was there. And that's essentially what you want. I mean, listen, if you get everything else, it's like a cherry on top kind of feeling. But as far as meeting the litmus test of entertainment value, it did that. So you have to be satisfied in that regard. But the turnaround on the character from what we thought the Mandarin was, that's the part that it ruined it for me, because that character could have really been a Lex Luthor or a Joker. I mean, that's essentially his preeminent arch nemesis in Iron Man mythology. And you know, later on in the film, that was taken away in some way. So that's what was problematic for me. That's the main thing that ruined it for me. But you're right. Kingsley is an above-board actor, just as Robert Downey Jr. It is necessary, and this is one thing I have to give kudos to Marvel. When Marvel gets real actors to do this stuff, because this could have gone a whole different way. If they were to get a wrestler for every movie, if they were to get just grade C. I'm not even saying B-level actors. They got C-level actors do this stuff. Marvel would have been in a, you know, the level of acting ability, that is what really does it for these films. And there's no way these films would make the kind of money that they're making if they didn't have the real cornerstone talent to pull it off. So Marvel knows what they're doing. And I after seeing, because I never really saw the Wolverine trailer up until in the theater, now I'm invested in Wolverine. Who was the director that was initially connected to a Darrow from the wrestler? Darren Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky, yeah.
Now Aronofsky is a premier directorial talent. Premier. So I was like, you know, he was already doing Oscar caliber stuff with the wrestler. He brought back Mickey Rourke. I was very much invested in it before I even saw the trailer. But when he left the film, I was getting nervous. I'm like, oh, nah, this is not going to work. Just the trailer alone, I don't know how it's going to happen, but the trailer alone, way above the first movie.
And
we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But the trailer alone, one of the best trailers I've seen, one of the best trailers I've seen in a long time for a comic book movie. And I saw that during Iron Man.
And I bet you, Captain. Captain must have been beaming with that Star. You guys got the latest Star Trek trailer, right?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Visually stunning, doesn't even cover it. The only reason to have the 3D glasses for this joint was the Star Trek trailer. That in 3D, that's 3D. You know, other movies pretend to be 3D. That sucked you in. And,
especially the jump off the cliff. The jump off the cliff. That was big.
Oh, I have a fear of heights, and I was getting sick in the seat, but at the same time, I'm like, this is awesome. You know, the jump off the cliff, the jump in the city off of the building, that in 3D, if they shoot that right, if it's not just that, if it's the, totally awesome. Back to you, Afronerd.
Yeah, I mean, they're already talking about Benedict Cumberbatch, UK Sherlock, for those who are the uninitiated. They're already talking about this guy's acting ability. They're already touting it as something next level. So, and they're talking about him. I guess he's kind of embedded in that universe. So we might see him again for a future Star Trek. So I guess there's no death scene, or I don't know how what's going on with the character. But they're already making it seem as if he's the second coming. So I can't wait. Now, as far as Iron Man is concerned, as far as money, the movie is barely out, gentlemen. I mean, let's face it, it's barely out, at least in the Americas. But that's all I know about. Barely out and already approaching half a billion.
Hey,
this
you're
is
up, yo.
This is incredible.
For it. Before it premiered here, it was out for 3 days in Europe, and mainly Britain and France and stuff. Already, it was $365 million before Thursday's opening. 2 days, 3 days in Europe, $365 million. Wow. I think the bar has been raised here, gentlemen.
Listen, it's been raised because the money, they've already made their money back. They're saying the budget on Iron Man 3 was $200 million. To date, that's a lot of money if you think about it. For a grade B, formerly grade B, I can't even call Iron Man a grade B or a grade level B superhero. I think at one point, I mean, now Iron Man is pretty much as ubiquitous as Batman or Superman at this point. But when he first came on the scene, you know, who would think to invest $200 million in an Iron Man film? See, now I'm saying $200 million very casually. But you got to think about where we came from to get for Iron Man to be a $200 million movie. Now, it's already made $413 million already. And this is the beginning of a spring-summer situation. The beginning. Half a billion already. Almost half a billion.
Yeah, talk about a great kickoff. And we've all skirted around the issue. Can we get Don Cheadle his own movie now?
Well, listen, he talked about this. I mean, he seemed to hint in that direction. You know, you're talking about Don Cheadle. You know who I want. I'm not even going to mention it. You know who I want. So I don't know. I'm hearing somebody else is. What is the deal, Daryl, with? The last time I'm going to mention this, okay, because the audience knows I'm obsessed with the Black Panther movie. But now we're hearing that the gentleman that is in 42, the Jackie Robinson biopic. Now I'm hearing, I think, Sergio Mims, our friend from Shadow and Act, he is saying that now they're looking at him to be in Black Panther. So there's so much skirting around this movie. I mean, it's probably the most desirable or most desired movie that might not ever get made.
Hey, it's Marvel's JLA. You know, we'll keep on getting rumors upon hearsay until we actually have something on film, something recorded. You know, we're going to keep on getting stories until we have something tangible. You know, that's what we're waiting on. And you know what? I'd be remiss in not thanking Jon Favreau for being a good sport and not getting Cyclopsed here. You know, that he may be gone from this franchise, but just his appearance and stuff in this leads me to believe that Marvel Studios will want him to do something else for them later on. The bridges aren't burned, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's the case, too. I think he even hinted at that as well, that they still – heck, there's even talk that Terrence Howard may be involved in Marvel still. But I know he's really – but I think he was put in a real precarious situation. It was his agent, man. Well, not just his agent, but the fact that Marvel – listen, Marvel can be very shrewd and or cruel even. He was paid top dollar, the highest paid actor in Iron Man 1. By Iron Man 2 – They didn't want to pay him the kind of money they really could have paid him. If you pay somebody $7 million for the first time out, now that's before the movie has been established, they don't want to pay this guy any more than that for a character that's kind of he's a second tier character in the Iron Man thing. But he, you know, if he had played it cool, he could have been perhaps in his own franchise. We will see if there will be a Black Iron Man. I don't know. We can't seem to get a Black Panther, so I don't know.
But okay, listen. Last thing also on this, yo, love the call out to fans of the Fraction series with the rescue scene. But then you have Cheeto later on wanting the armor like that, and Stark went, no, yours doesn't work like that. I felt a punch to the gut there, like. Nah. How could he have the cool armor, but I don't? No said.
Well, you know, that there's a lot of subtext in that too. I wasn't gonna read it that deep. It was pretty funny though.
Yes, it was funny.
Did you catch the subliminal when they took the Super Friends jab?
Yes, they did. The Pope DC right there. What are they? You are hanging out with what? Your Super Friends? Too much time for us? I just went, Superman better be good. Anyway,
exactly.
All right.
And in homage of Patton Oswalt, let's go to a jam from you-know-who, Adam Warrock, Infinity Gems, appropriately entitled Infinity Gems. We'll be back in a few moments, and then let's talk more about, Pulp stuff. We'll be right back, folks. Let's groove.
Shit. I just figured out exactly what the track's missing. Hold up.
Really, I don't understand the science of it. Ultimate nullifier, the way the mic is covered. Call me Mr. Fantastic when I spit scripture, cause every line you read, I get richer. Herald of Galactus, I spit barrel chested lyrics for practice, tilt the world's axis. I know you're thinking it's strange that I'm a doctor, rock like Ben Grimm, bullseye, who shot ya? Right between the eyes and the forehead, third eye vision. Hand in hand with every word I'm spitting. Watch as I assemble rhymes coming straight at your temple. I'm like a summer-filled studio temple. I gotta be the only MC with a law degree. Those hating on my style are all Matt Murdock. See, I got the power, man, hour after hour. And stop with all the talk of Marvel versus DC. And all these cats shocking my swagger. Stand up and show how green you get when you're Martian man. Huh? Yeah, I'm big-headed like I'm Bruce the Cole. Because I rock around the clock and never lose the flow. And did I mention that the death of my chest ain't for Clark? Can I spit shot through rickety rocks to pay the rent? Check my bank statement, rank better than state schools. A stretched out basement like the way that Bruce Wayne do. I hold the gauntlet, man, you don't want it. Throwing up a fist, cause Adam's the grand vaunted. I got the soul gem making you dance. As I hold the universe in the palm of my hand. And War Rock, I catch me.
And why not maybe celebrate the way that we do? Cause even geeks wanna have fun too. I hope a godless man, you don't want it. Throwing up a fist, cause that Instagram wants it. I got the soul jam making you dance. That I hold the universe in the palm of my hand. And four rocks, got cats ready to jump and shout. Don't have a fist if you think that you're down. Because I rock it through a lead from beginning to end. I'm way beyond like that. I rock infinity gems. The war for infinity. In stores now.
Okay, again, that was Adam Warrock, Infinity Gems, and briefly, gentlemen, since it's, you know, it's entitled Infinity Gems, and at the top of the show, where we always play these movie clips or some kind of pop culture clip, I mentioned that we played Patton Oswalt's viral rant from Parks and Recreation, and he's, you know, it's completely hilarious. He certainly has, you know, he knows his stuff, although, you know, for comedic purposes, some stuff didn't match or whatever. But even the geekier folks that are geekier than him were able to note some of the inconsistencies in what he was saying. But nevertheless, he knew his stuff. And for comedic purposes, the rant was brilliant. But what are your thoughts on that, Darryl? I mean, you know, some of what he says, you know, you don't think geeks wouldn't want to see something like that? I mean, wouldn't it be? I mean, listen. If they were going to do, we don't know what the Thanos movie is going to look like, this Avengers 2. We don't know what's going to happen, but there is a, you know, it's not like it couldn't be done cinematically, at least partially, this, you know, the reality gem that he references. That could be kind of a, you know, super cool thing all of a sudden. It's like a minute reference to Star Wars because it's a different reality. I mean, you don't think the studio heads might not look at that. I mean, I think YouTube, that YouTube thing is like 2 or 3 million views. I mean, you know, what do you think?
Listen, for us, it'd be a field day, you know, because it'd be a mashup beyond mashups, right? I'm a guy who loves two universes mashing up, two properties crossing over. I love that because in the compare contrast, and differences is where you get, like, the oodles and the goodies and stuff like that. Come on. No, any real comic book nerd picked up DC versus Marvel. I at least read it, all right? And you all got jazzed up with the Amalgam Universe where they combined two heroes, and they had a whole slew of books where you had Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., you had Dark Claw adventures, essentially Wolverine as Batman. You know, you had Super Soldier, the combine of Captain America and Superman. You know, this, what Patton Oswalt said, would be one of the ultimate mashups, where you would have Marvel Universe characters crossing over with Star Wars characters. You know, Swordsman versus Luke Skywalker in a cross swords thing, or even better, Taskmaster. You know, you'd have the possibility of the Emperor taking on Doctor Strange, something like that. You know, the possibilities are endless. That's what makes it fun. You know, there's no finite rule. There's no you can't. It's idealistic, not idealistic, but idealistic, where you can't touch it. You can't, we can't taint the property. We can't, but it's intellectual property, A, and B, it's something we argue about all the time. You know, we argue about it at bars, at comic shops, at libraries. Hey, this hero is better than this hero, and this is why. This hero is better than this hero, and this is why. This sort of thing, if it ever happens, which, you know, they're both under Disney's corporate umbrella now, you know, it's possible, you're at least going to get it in the comics. I guarantee within the next 18, 19 months, you'll hear a project like that comic book-wise. We just had Legion of Superheroes crossover with Star Trek. We just had Doctor Who crossover with Star Trek: The Next Generation. If both properties are under the same umbrella, and you get a creator like a Peter David, or Christopher Golden, or you know, that knows both universes and could bring them alive, it's eminently possible on paper. Movie wise, the problem comes with the movie houses. Oh, you can use that character, but you can't use this character. We own the rights to that character. This can't happen here. This can't happen here. And going back to what Captain said last time, that's why I found the Super Friends reference so cool. That you're telling me in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that they have knowledge of the 80s DC animation. Or
well,
70s
listen.
DC animation.
Well, listen,
that's
it
was a call out.
They've done secret jabs with each other all the time. I just read a recent Daredevil, where I know you know this, Daryl, where a little kid points to Daredevil and says, "Hey, look, Red Batman," in the comic book. I think like last month, Daredevil, or 2 months ago. So they do these things, and also even cinematically, we've seen mashups before. I just don't know why they seem to be hesitant of making it more so. Listen, in 80, was it 87? 87 was when Predator 2 came out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
No, or is it later than that? Maybe the Danny Glover Predator. But anyway, that's when we first saw the alien. What is it? What did we see? We saw the alien heads. That's the first time we actually saw that. And even on this show, we've discussed Ridley Scott himself has intimated about really the alien universe, aliens, for those who get where I'm coming from, that universe now recently with last year's Prometheus, Predator, that universe, and Blade Runner, all are interconnected. They're all interconnected, so I don't understand why it wouldn't be feasible to see more of this bleeding through, or this blending on some levels. And you know, when you think about Thanos coming into play for Avengers 2, you got Guardians of the Galaxy, Marvel certainly wants a Star Wars-esque, intergalactic, fantasy-oriented opera. Everyone's chasing Star Wars. So, I mean, what's the purpose of having a Guardians of the Galaxy if there isn't going to be some kind of Star Wars, either a jab at Star Wars or maybe some direct reference to Star Wars? I mean, it doesn't make any sense on some level. Why have these otherworldly properties and there not being some Star Wars reference in there or some direct connection? I mean, unfortunately, Warner Brothers can't do it, but Green Lantern was supposed to have been an intro into that kind of world, and for whatever reason, they just mucked it up. Captain, your thoughts?
Yes, sir, certainly. So here's what you're seeing at this given point. You know why you're seeing so many superhero movies? It's the nature of the beast. Record companies do the same thing. What happens is someone says, okay, let's put out a movie here, let's put a movie out here. It works. Then everybody wants to get on cookie-cutter mold. So we're going to see more and more superhero movies. You know why? Because it's working. It doesn't matter how good the movie would have been. If it didn't work, you would not be seeing it. That's the bottom line. So now, when it comes to crossing universes, it makes logical sense. But these individuals don't think so much logically most of the time. We see it 8 years in advance. Oh, why didn't you just do this? They sit back in their office and they go, yeah, but no one did that as yet. No one has done it, spent $250 million at this level yet. You know, what we like to do is just buy a comic book and put it out on the screen, or buy a regular book, you know, and just put it on the screen. That's what we do to make money. Now you're saying, take this person's story and this person's story and this person's story and cross it. I don't know. But now, because of what happened with Avengers, they see, and any fool can see this, a blind man can see this, you can build up to that where you can get to the point where you can cross over and make all of these crossover universes into one movie. But in their mindset, they're thinking from a standpoint, well, let us just make the money on all these initial movies first. We know we have that in the bank. Now let's go ahead and try this. Even though we know if you put that movie out right now, everybody is going to see it right now. You'll drop what you're doing to go see something like that. But they don't think from that way. They think from, you know, that's the traditional standpoint. That's why we're in the, you know, the situation that we're in right now, in my opinion. That's all. That's all.
All right, listen, we have a caller. Let's open up the lines and let's see what our callers have to say. Caller, welcome to the Comic Shop. This is the Grindhouse. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. 626, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, sir? This is Covina, man.
What's up, Covina?
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, I just like to, you know, comment on, I mean, get great show as usual. I like to comment on the switch up with the Mandarin. And as a, you know, Marvel fan, you know, big time, long back, you know, way back, I didn't necessarily mind that switch up in this particular movie. Compared to, maybe I'm comparing it to some of the, you know, screw ups that other people have done with Marvel characters, i.e. Deadpool in the Wolverine movie, and especially the Super Skrull showing up as a, you know, with the Fantastic Four movie. I didn't mind that they switched up on the Mandarin. It actually made it, you know, humorous. I got it, and it just fit, because the other guy was the villain. It kind of fit more of a technological villain, you know, going against Iron Man than East versus West, you know, with the Mandarin represented in the comics kind of thing.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I mean, listen, as far as how it played on screen, honestly, it was entertaining, but I guess it's bothersome for someone, for folks who know how this works. And I agree with you. It was still a good movie, but it's just in the back of your mind, you know, many of us geeks, we're so embedded to mythology and continuity. And I thought that the way Ben Kingsley played that role up until the reveal, this was the Mandarin. I mean, he was a badass Mandarin. You know, matter of fact, his acting was so on board, he didn't even need to have the power, those rings. That was one of the failings that I had a problem with, too. You know, if you're going to keep with comic book lore, those rings are supposed to make him a match for someone like Iron Man. But without the rings, his acting was so over the top, and he was so
megalomaniacal.
Yeah,
what I said.
He was so heinous. Like, wow, this guy's incredible. And then when he went, I mean, again, his acting ability, even when he switched up, he was still Ben Kingsley, the actor, still on point. But I was a little disappointed. I thought that they could have still played it straight with him, and that he would have disappeared into the shadows, and then we would have seen him at some other point. They made it now where there will never be a Mandarin, theoretically.
Yeah, well, I look at it this way. It's successful if you make AIM a powerful organization, the think tank. If you make Advanced Idea Mechanics a power player on the undercurrent of these movies also, where they're a big faceless corporation now you got Roxxon Oil being mentioned, you got all of these. If you make that a player, then you could forgive what you did with the Mandarin here. But me personally, I was looking for, oh, okay, the Mandarin gets the rings. Wouldn't it have been cool if the rings found their way to Earth from the incident that happened in the Thor movie where they attacked and stole the casket of ancient winners? You know, that would have been cool. If that's where the rings were, but in the process of the frost giants going in there, the rings made their way to Earth, and Mandarin by happenstance found them. Or the rings are somehow connected to the Infinity Gems, you know? And Thanos notices that their power is being used on Earth through these things.
Well, you know
there were so many directions that you could have taken it that that's the only reason why I'm disappointed in how the Mandarin was written here. Kingsley knocked it out of the park.
Well, you know something else?
Yeah, I thought...
You hinted at this, is that Iron Man almost suffered the problem, if it is a problem, suffered the problem that Batman suffers in that these technological heroes have a greater attachment to reality than the other heroes. So Iron Man 1 gave you that impression, but this movie, he said, you know, with the whole PTSD thing, that, you know, that there's aliens out there, there's all these mythological creatures. My world is not what I thought it was. So since they already breached that hurdle of this hero, which is very much grounded in reality, now is dealing with stuff that's not so much his world. So if that's the case, you might as well have done the actual rings, which you just described. It's so otherworldly. You wouldn't think it could mix in with this technological hero, but. The movie already tells you, the third one said, hey, listen, this world exists. This world is here. Therefore, they should have gone ahead with the technological rings. They could have done all that. I don't know why they pulled back off of that. That's the problem that I have.
And also think about the character arc of Tony Stark. In one, he was cocky. He was over the top. In two... He showed a bit more humor. He showed a bit more vulnerability. And now in three, let's face it, the bravado he shows in the movie is a cover. You know, it's a cover because he's finally healed from the heart. His chest plate killing him. He's finally healed for that. But what he went through in New York with the rest of the Avengers, it just goes to show that people take it lightly. Oh, another invasion in New York. Oh, it's an alien attack. Everybody wants to hear, oh, cool, you're in it. Oh, man, how was it? Well, aliens, huh? What do you think? Are they coming back? And mentally, all he wanted to do was, I don't want to think about New York again. I don't want
to
think about New York again.
Kavina, you had a comment.
Yeah.
What were you wanting to say?
I was just going to say, like, when you bring in the AIM character or the organization, I thought they was going to bring in the MODOK. somewhere they had a reference to somebody having a large head. So I was thinking, okay, AIM, that's MODOK's organization, so... I don't know if that's more of a Captain America enemy or you know, how that fits in, but I could have sworn it was going to bring in MODOK.
Let's move things, because we got a few minutes left, Daryl. Let's move things along. We have plenty of time to talk about Iron Man. Let's move things along. There's a lot of stuff that's going on, ironically, more Marvel-related stuff, and I want to keep Kavina Man on for a moment. Let's unpack a couple of things. First, cross-racial... Another incident of cross-racial casting that I'm uncomfortable with. Michael B. Jordan, no relation to the legendary, iconic basketball player. We know him from Chronicle. Allegedly, Fox has tapped him to be the Human Torch for the Fantastic Four reboot. I don't want to see this mess. I don't want to see it. Daryl, explain this to me. If they're not going to make this an all-black FF, why?
Oh, my God.
Hey.
I didn't hear about that.
It's a mess already.
I think it would be groundbreaking. I think it would absolutely be groundbreaking. It'd be a slap in the face to traditionalists, but think about the American family these days. The American family, we see a lot more mixed couples. We see a lot more cross nationality dating, you know? So, Sue and Johnny Coe are products of a mixed home. That would be fantastic. The problem is we have grown to love Johnny Storm as blonde, blue-eyed, fiery temper, you know, hothead. You know, we've grown, that's the image. But like I said, the same thing I'm going to use with Peter Parker. There is nothing in Johnny Storm's backstory that makes him eminently white. He can be played by another character. And hell, in the first two Fantastic Four movies, we had a Latina playing Sue Storm. You know,
and people
the problem
didn't, and
with
listen,
that was,
and
the problem
had,
with that
and,
was,
and people had,
they
and people had problems
it by
with
her
it.
Hair.
And listen, and folks had problems with it. Because it came off like she was, like it was whiteface. You know,
yeah.
The blonde hair, the blue contacts. It was a mess. I mean, that's my problem. Listen, you know, I'm all for multiracial casting. I'm for it. But my problem is I take issue where it's you just replace a character's ethnicity as an afterthought, just because it's cool. It's not really addressing the issue. Create multicultural original characters instead of just replacing someone. Okay, Captain America's black right now. I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about right now. Instead of just with the black Spider-Man thing, that's a separate Spider-Man. It's a separate, it's an off-tangent story that makes sense. I can agree with that. They created something out of thin air, theoretically.
No, but I was
just
referring
hold
more
on.
To,
but just,
to Childish Gambino.
Now, hold on one second. But just having, just replacement, okay, we're just going to make him black one day. I mean, I guess I have a problem with it because we never got the Fantastic Four movie we really wanted. And all of this stems back from this stuff not being in the house of Marvel. You know, now there's another story that's come up is that Daredevil has reverted back to Marvel, as well as Ghost Rider, as well as Blade. So now the only problem is we've had a decade of all these movies. Marvel might not want to touch it because it's got too much stink on these characters now.
All right.
That's the problem.
So you're now arguing against it, but you haven't answered the question. We were all up in arms about giving Donald Glover a chance to do the role because there was nothing in Peter Parker's backstory that made him white. As a matter of fact, he came from one of the most multicultural neighborhoods in America in Forest Hills. So it would be possible for him to be that way. I'm just saying there is nothing with Johnny Storm in how the social climate is today that says he can't be black.
Hold on. Listen, this is the deal. I see the passions. Where's that that clip, Captain, of the rage clip that we always play? You need to be on top of this, sir. Anyway.
Wait, I'm not angry about it. You're the one that's getting angry about it. I'm just saying this kid, who we all said was a breakout star in Chronicle, he was great in Chronicle. Give him the chance to compete for the role. You hear this? You, sir, are a hypocrite.
No, I'm not. And I'll explain why. This is the deal. You're conflating the ultimate Spider-Man, or rather, the second ultimate Spider-Man with the first Spider-Man.
Let me finish my point. Okay, all right.
You're talking. Peter Parker is Peter Parker. Miles Morales is Miles Morales. Two different characters.
I didn't bring up Miles Morales.
No, but
you brought up Miles Morales.
No,
I said Childish Gambino, a.k.a. Donald Glover, trying out for Peter Parker. And
I didn't agree with that. I say,
well,
if you can,
I agreed with it because it's a different age, a different time, a different society. You can do that.
No, you can't. This is the deal. Make a if you're gonna do whatever you're gonna do, just make a separate character instead of just we have to pretend that for 50 years of history where the character was white, now he's black all of a sudden. I mean, you know, maybe it's a case by case basis, Daryl, but in the sense of the black Spider-Man, we can see that because it's a different Spider-Man than a Peter Parker. It's just a different guy. It's not the they're gonna make Johnny Storm black all of a sudden. And now if it's different if he was a separate Human Torch, but he's not. We just have to assume this is Johnny Storm now. After 50 years, literally 50 years of the guy being white, just create more black, Hispanic, and Asian characters so we don't have to be getting somebody sloppy seconds, which is what this is.
Okay, you had a problem with Idris Elba as Hemdo? You had a problem with Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin?
Yeah, actually, I did. Well, Michael Clark Duncan, yeah. Because I was used to seeing, as long as I've been collecting comic books, this sumo-sized white man, Irishman. I would have preferred to see who I saw all those years in comic books. Most comic book fans want to see. I agree with multicultural casting, you know, to a certain degree, but why can't we get – I mean, would you feel comfortable if all of a sudden you have Liam Neeson as the Black Panther? Would you want that?
The creature is driven by rage.
The reason I would have a problem with that is he's eminently black. His sociological and stuff, the mythology is eminently black behind the Black Panther. That's where people are getting this confused, okay? Johnny Storm is a hothead. Johnny Storm loves cars. Johnny Storm loves women. Johnny Storm loves comedy. He loves playing pranks on his friend Ben Grimm, all right? And that's all the basis behind the character. He's the sister of Sue Storm, and he's now the brother-in-law to Reed Richards, all right? That's the character. There's nothing in there that says, well, Johnny Storm is Irish, coming down from noblemen in England. You know, there's nothing like that behind Johnny Storm. That's why I didn't say give the role to him. I said he should be allowed to audition for it. And if he's the best actor that does it, if he feels realistic in words, then you know what? He's Johnny Storm. If he earns it. I don't want it given to him. He has to earn it. This is America, people. You earn what you're given.
Okay,
right?
Well, listen,
you're denying him the right to skin color.
Let Kabina speak. Kabina, what's up?
Yeah, I was just going to add, I think that people, it seemed it came out of nowhere that people had a problem with a black character showing up in the, the Hunger Games, that I know they would have a really bad reaction to a black guy showing up in the Fantastic Four or Spider-Man. I think it'd be better for them just, you know, do Panther or just do Luke Cage or something else. Stay with the characters that people have, you know, grown that attachment to. Because once you start messing with people's icons, they're going to lose it. You know, they look at making $200-something million with these characters, and, you know, you give them a reason not to show up, and they're not going to show up.
There's only one thing to add. That particular character that you mentioned in Hunger Games was actually written, if one reads the book, as really a black person. So those people are just being blatant racist. That's all they were really doing. You know?
See, the problem is, the captain is getting where I'm getting at. We need to have, listen, we've had black creators on our show, right? Matter of fact, we're expecting, I think Dallin knows about this now, we're expecting Anthony Montgomery from the Star Trek Enterprise to come through pretty soon. And we're going to ask him about these kind of, he has a book called Miles Away. He's got his own comic book. That's a separate story, but he's coming pretty soon. But the issue is, just write more black characters. Just write more black characters. That's the issue. We're getting crumbs off the master's table. That's the issue. And I think with Hunger Games, the problem with Hunger Games are the racism was there because these characters were black and they didn't like him anyway. They were written clearly as characters of color, and these people were hating because in their minds were, everything is white. Now, this is different than these issues where these characters really were written as white. I mean, that's the problem, Dan. Listen, some things you're going to overlook because they're lesser characters. You know, like Perry White is now going to be played by Larry Fishburne. All right, Larry Fishburne is an excellent actor. Can't take anything away from him. It's not going to really take anything away from the movie. But major characters, I don't know, man.
Well, you didn't have a problem with Alicia Masters?
Who?
Oh, Alicia Masters.
She's kind of on the same level as Perry White. The main characters, there's an issue with that. The issue is, right, I take an example. With Superman, before DC 52, has a black brother-in-law. You know this, right? He has
Ron Drew.
Right. They didn't know what to do with him. Okay? we've seen even what in Spider-Man, there's several black characters in that that were just, you know, that were pretty decent characters. Robbie Robinson and his son, what's his name, Glory?
Gloria Grant.
Gloria Grant. These were back in the 60s they were written in. We just didn't see them. I mean, their characters are there. Krypton has a black island. Krypton has a black island.
But,
that's never been written in.
But again, if you don't start the progress somewhere, where are you going to start it? You know, it's a new age. It's a new social dynamic. I think it would be pretty cool because there is a lot more mixed relationships and mixed families out there.
But, Darryl, the problem is when it was a point to do this, when they had the Ultimate Universe, listen, we accepted Sam Jackson because there was a black Nick Fury written into it. They just made the character. They wrote him that way.
But there it is. He had to start somewhere. For this one, this is a great start to me.
Guys, this sucks. We did not get the Fantastic Four we were supposed to get, Darryl. Start to experiment when you did it the first time going around. Like if Iron Man was like a different way all of a sudden, we've gotten the Iron Man we wanted. We never got the Fantastic Four. We didn't even get Galactus. We got a Cloud. We got crappy movies before. Now we didn't get it right. Let's get it right the first time. Get experiment later.
Okay. I'll just say it like this. You can't get Chris Evans back. He's wearing red, white, and blue. All right? If a black man wants to try out for the role, I ain't denying it. I am not denying it.
Okay.
It is 2013. We have mixed families there, sir.
I understand.
Get your mind out of the past.
Well, listen, that's not what I'm saying. They had an Ultimate Fantastic Four book, didn't they? They had an Ultimate.
Yes.
Why didn't they explore this then?
Well, they didn't. They didn't. They didn't explore it. This guy wants to explore it. He wants to give it a shot. All right? And again, you love this kid in Chronicle. He was the breakout star in Chronicle, and his character in Chronicle could parallel Edwin Torch.
Next week, got a minute.
Yeah. All right. Okay. But, hey, I love the discussion. It's awesome.
Yes, it was great. Now we got
MIP is correct. I'm running your thing now. Damn
all right, let's go, guys. Let's go.
Human Torch is white. All right. All right.
There we go.
As always, you always have a passion. Folks, you understand we love these characters. We do. We really do. So, Kavita, as always, man, you may want
Thanks
to stick around
for
the show. We got to go to part two next door, Afternoon Radio. It's been real, gentlemen. We'll do it again. Reconvene next week. It's been real.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Asking me to vouch for you. Well, the funny thing about vouching for someone, James, is that when that someone shows himself to be less than what was promised, every decision you take from that point on is second-guessed. And that, in my line of work, is suicide. And besides, why does a cool, mellow fellow like yourself want to hang around with a bunch of stuffy old white guys?
Same reason you want to hang around those stuffy old white guys. Power. Connection. But let's keep it real. I'm just a cool, mellow fellow. Just shucking and jiving. Crip walking, basketball playing, singing, dancing, and taking out your garbage. That's what I am to you.
You're right. You are African American. And myself and my friends, for the most part, don't care for the company of African Americans. Quite frankly, we're entertained by you. We're thrilled by your high-flying acrobatics on the basketball court. That wonderful sense of rhythm you have. Your animal athleticism. But apart from that, we have no use for you. Understand? I mean, let's face it, James. Do you set a place at your dinner table for your pit bulls? Now, is this keeping it real enough for you?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, ladies and gents. This is the second half. This is the Grindhouse, Afro-Nerd Radio, or a.k.a. Afro-Nerd, featuring Captain Kirk. Boy, do we have a passionate, festive conversation with the last show. You folks might want to go back, even for those who may not be into pulp culture or pop culture. It's a thing to behold when you see nerds really getting at it. We were extremely passionate. That is myself, the captain, and, of course, the indefatigable Daryl B., talking about make-believe. Getting passionate about make-believe is something, folks. Again, Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot to discuss in the hour, so let's just get to it. But before we do that, you know what we always do? We always give you a nice, slow, cooking groove, cooking funk. This is a blast from the past from the late Roger Troutman. This is Everybody Get Up. Everybody Get Up, Roger Troutman. Let's groove, folks. Let's get into it, and we'll be right back with more discourse.
We'll be right back.
you know, I'm going to have to beam the great captain up to our starship. He's on Rigel 4 dealing with the lower tier. If only he could have seen me groove and pop lock to that cut. Again, legendary and unfortunately late funkster Roger Troutman. And that was Everybody Get Up. All right, folks, everybody get up. The captain, Captain Kirk, it's your time, sir. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Intro that we have for this show is rather brutal. That's number one. And kudos to you and Daryl from the last show. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, you know something else? You know, since you mentioned that clip, again, folks, that's from Blood and Bone, Michael Jai White. Blood and Bone, I believe 2009, so it's a few years ago. The black actor in that discourse, Eamon Walker, you may remember him from Oz. And he's an Afro-Brit, actually. Because you are African-American. And, you know, he said, well, technically I'm Afro-Brit. Shouting out our own Afro-Brit from London. So just something to put out there. Eamon Walker, excellent actor. And, hey, these cats, they know how to work the accent thing. He sounds like, you know, anyone from the Americas. But in actuality, he is of British extraction. Anyway, Captain, we have a show to get to. This is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. You know what? Let's talk about, first up, this deal. We've been going back and forth about this thing with some of these minstrels. I mean, listen, the cornerstone of Afternoon is really our battle with coonery and minstrelsy. And it seems like we might be getting an edge on some of this stuff. Case in point, we saw recently that Rick Ross, we know that he said some things, one of his lyrics likened himself to raping a woman, or he inferenced a date rape scene, and he expected to get away with that. Didn't work out that well. Now, I mean, he can still perform it. We can still see, unfortunately, black women reciting the lyrics. We talked about that from the legendary HBCU Tuskegee University, the female student body, at least at that concert, which you can see on YouTube, they were reciting the infamous chat with glee. So that's problematic. However, he lost his Reebok contract. Now we're hearing that Weezy, a.k.a. Lil Wayne, a.k.a. a bug of a human being. He's a bug of a human being. Let's just be frank about that. He's losing his contract with Pepsi because of his lyrics that were shockingly just horrific toward the Emmett Till story and Emmett Till's family. If anyone is familiar with that story, you know, 1955, I believe, was the year. This young man, 14 years of age at the time, allegedly, it's never really been proven, allegedly he whistled at a white woman, allegedly. And at some point later on that night, he was killed and beaten to a unrecognizable pulp. He was no longer, he didn't look anything recognizably human. And his mother, who lived really up until recently, again, we're talking about almost 60 years ago, and his mother was still around, still lucid, still focused on this tragedy that befell her son. You know, the story is infamous. It's a story that really was a linchpin for the civil rights movement. Now, years later, you have a rapper likening sex to a woman to the beating of Emmett Till. So you can't get a pass for that. You almost did. But someone, even it appears that there appears to be some line that we have. We talk incessantly, Captain, that the line appears to be blurred. We don't even know where the line is anymore because there's so much disrespect on wax and in media. So his contract has been lifted as well. And now we have Tyler the Creator from Odd Future. An alternative act. I don't know if they'll get burned here. Because there's something about that act that doesn't jive well with me. Normally I would be all over I would be all over Odd Future. But I've listened to some of their work. Their work still has a minstrel edge, and somehow they still get the tag of being alternative. I think they still fit the meme. They still fit the meme. So they put out this Mountain Dew ad, and that ad is problematic. I mean, where does it end, Captain? What are your thoughts on this? I think I might have a clip on this. What are your thoughts on this thing?
Well, I think pertaining to the ad, the Mountain Dew ad, Dr. Boyce Watkins, I think, voiced his opinion pertaining to that. Thought it was very racist. Thought that it pushed a lot of stereotypes with black males that you see in the media. My personal opinion looking at the ad was that it did push a lot of those stereotypes. Definitely did push a lot of those stereotypes. And I think those individuals, Mr. Creator, as he calls himself, he really wasn't thinking. Again, they can't really see further, you know, out in front of them more than about 2 inches. So they're not really thinking. They don't see the whole scope. They can't see the whole parameter of the whole situation. They just think right in front of them. Because when you're dealing with, you know, lineups have a lot to do with also in which state that you're in. You go to certain states, the lineup will be white, believe it or not, listeners. You know, when you go to the lineup and you have to look at people and pick them out, depending on which state that you're in, it changes dramatically. So if you're going to really make an ad like this, you needed to mix it up. If you were thinking, if you could see the whole picture, not just a small piece. And then also, too, he comes back and he says, Mr. Creator, he comes back and says, well, those were my friends that I put in there. You wanted to give them dap, as they say on the street. Give them, you know, credit on the street. He messed up. And it's a statement that we make all the time here on the show pertaining to young people. Young people stay losing. They stay losing because they do not want to draw on the knowledge of older people who have experienced the same thing. So you're prone to make these type of mistakes. And even though he's wrong, in my opinion, he's wrong, he's still defending himself saying, oh, you know, this was just done like this. This is done like that. You should just, you know, keep it going. Give me a chance. No, it's not going to work here. Do we have the clip up as of yet, Sir Afro Nerd?
No, I was mistaken. I thought, you know, because of time constraints, I didn't really get a clip going for this thing. I don't think a clip is really necessary. I don't really want to give too much burn to these minstrels, to be honest with you. I go in and out of that. Sometimes you put so much highlighting. You know, I don't want to play the commercial. I really want to highlight the mental capacity, the lack of cognition with some of these folks that we go on and on about. If you go to these ghetto blogs, shouting out Sergio Mims, we talk about this all the time. I know he and I, we have a somewhat of a penchant for visiting these cyber ghettos, but that's exactly what they are. They're cyber ghettos, and they repeat certain lower-tier themes, lower-tier memes that are harmful. Now, for someone with the cognitive abilities as myself and Mr. Mims, we can look at it as outsiders. But there are others that are looking at this stuff as a part of life, that this is another day. When they go to media takeout, it's actually information, frighteningly so. I think there's even some stats to back this up, Captain, that a large amount or a large portion of the black community are getting their news, or their news sources are comprised from, let me repeat that, their news sources are comprised of gossip and media takeout, it's incredibly bad. Because they are masters of disinformation and misinformation. Really,
that's
really
right.
Promoting and promulgating regressive paradigms, regressive cultural tropes. We don't need to see this type of stuff. But they're put out there as fact. you know, and it's, unfortunately, many of our folk, if you're going to be tribal, they're gobbling this stuff up as fact. And when I go on there, I do go to these blogs partially to see how the other half thinks, and I go there also to advertise. I clearly go there to say, hey, they get a lot of views. I'm going to throw up some inferences to Afro-Nerd Radio. If you folks want to know of a different way, you could take the red pill or the blue pill. We saw the Matrix. If you want to take the blue pill and unplug the wire that's sticking out of the back of your head so you can see what's really going on, come to Afro-Nerd Radio. If you want to maintain with the minstrelsy and the coonery, then keep the plug in the back of your head. Keep it plugged in. That's literally what we're talking about here. This stuff is—it's crazy, and honestly, Captain, and you know this—we talk about this all the time. I hit these folks hard, the commenters and the minstrels on those blogs. I hit them hard, and many of them—they'll tell me, "Wow, you know, you speak pretty rough," but I cannot disassemble, atomize, or deconstruct your argument. Cannot be done. But on occasion, you will have a fool that will try to test me and say, get your preaching ass off of here. You know, you're preaching. And I finally figured out what these folks that refuse the truth or refute the truth, I found out who they were, Captain. We study pop culture. They are vampires. Think about it. Just as you put, this is what listen, we're not into spookism either, but for the sake of this argument, I'm going to go into a spook analogy. Just as you see someone put up a crucifix in pop culture lore, you put that crucifix on the forehead of a otherworldly or underworldly beast, and he starts to hiss, he starts to smoke, he starts to regurgitate. That's what these folks are doing. You hit them so hard, they can't handle it. That's what it is, vampires.
Holy blood, it's stronger than the Lord. You're stronger than the Lord. The power of his might. The power of God is upon us. We are strong in the Lord and the power of his might. We are strong in the Lord and the power of his might.
That's Anthony good. Hopkins, Bram Stoker's, Blackula, Dracula. You know, that's what's happening there. When you tell them the truth, they start to spit and to hiss. And I'm not going for it. I know what you're doing. I know what they're doing. So when we go on here, and actually the reason why I mentioned this analogy of hissing and spitting, because that's what Tyler the Creator is doing when Boyce Watkins has stepped to him. Now, in his response to Boyce Watkins, the first thing he says, Tyler the Creator says, is, well, I don't really know this guy. He's some old guy, or he's an older guy. He already tries to dismiss you. I can't stand these young minstrels. I can't stand them. Because it's the same argument. Get away from how old someone is. First of all, the irony is, Watkins is not that old. Watkins might be, I don't know, early 40s maybe. But if someone is 20, obviously 40 is, you're ready for, Social Security, allegedly. Allegedly. But his response is not about what this man is telling him. It's, well, he's an old guy, so he's already trying to be dismissive. As you just said before, Captain, the younger fools aren't making it. The younger black poor devils, I'm going to channel in Doc Schultz from Django. These poor devils, they're not making it past 25. You're not making it past 25, so what's old age to you? You're dying off at 18. You're dying off at 20, 21, 22, because you're so smart. So I'm a little lost. I'm a little lost on that one. You know, if you can live a little longer, then maybe I could understand your point of view, but you're not making it that long. Also, when he says that he doesn't, you know, it's just a joke, these guys never apologize. They never give a sincere apology, and it goes to show you they could care less about the black community. They don't care. We saw this with I'm conflating all these minstrels together. I'm wrapping them up in a bundle, the stories, because they're the same story. Whether it's Rick Ross, who lost his sponsorship, whether it's Tyler the Creator, now he lost his gig with Mountain Dew, and also now with Lil Wayne and Pepsi. These are multi-million dollar sponsorships that these gentlemen, and I say gentlemen in quotes, are losing because they don't even want to apologize. When they call to the carpet, men own up to what they do. No one is a man, Captain. They're males, but they're not men. They refuse to just apologize. Lil Wayne wrote this long response to the Till family. Now my understanding, the Till family want to actually meet up. I think that Reverend Sharpton is going to somehow be a mediator between these two. But they want to meet up with Lil Wayne. I don't know how successful that's going to be. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. But they're going to meet up to discuss him being some disrespectful weirdo. I mean, that's what he does. You know, you're going to meet up with a pornographer? We see how that's worked out. Pornography is still going strong. This is what these people do. They don't respect you. Their business has been a business of minstrelsy and disrespect. It's a codified industry, people. It's a codified industry, and it's not going anywhere. The best bet, invest in what we do. And I'm not trying to be facetious. We promote the other side, not just us, but there's other folks that play the other music. There are other things going on instead of begging the minstrels to stop being minstrels. That's like begging a crocodile to stop biting people. It's not going to happen. What do you think about these, you know, before we go to a musical break, Captain, what are your thoughts about these half-assed apologies? That's the part that gets me. No one says, I'm sorry. They say, I'm sorry you feel that way. What's the harm in saying, I'm sorry? I mean, you likened having brutal sex, which is a problem within itself, brutal sex with a woman to the tragedy of Emmett Till, and you can't apologize for that. And then you wonder why they're taking your sponsorships away. What's going on here?
Well, that lends a lot to the rapper ego. A lot of rap has to do with the big ego, braggadocia. And that's really what a lot of that lends to. You know, so they go, and it, you know, these apologies are not sincere. We all see through that. Everyone can see through that. So, you know, you put both of those things together and you have them working on each other synergistically, and that's the end result. That's the concoction that you get, these half ASS apologies that we see. That's what it is. It has a lot to do with the ego of these rappers, that I'm always right, I'm the best, even when we know they're not, you know, all of that type of stuff wrapped up into one, you know. So that's what we have here. Essentially, that's the situation, Sir Raffinert.
One quick thing. I'm going to go to our friend Ja Williams in the chat room. He's saying some pretty insightful things. He says, I mean, have some freaking sense of pride. Even with Latinos, you never see a bunch of essays everywhere. Other races take control of how they want to be perceived. Black people think if you act like a productive member of society, you ain't keeping it real or you're acting white. The truth is that when you see other races, quote-unquote, acting white, nobody says bunk. But when black folks do, that's a whole different story.
Good point.
We're getting left behind, being embarrassed on a daily basis, and all of us get grouped into the minstrel BS. We have to take control of how we're perceived. I couldn't have said it any better myself. That's exactly what it is. And one more thing before we go to the break. We've got to hold these corporate structures to the carpet as well, because they could care less about who they're in bed with. All they're concerned with is, this guy's popular, let's hitch our caboose to him. Because no one has done the due diligence to know who these guys really are. I mean, it's not a mystery. Anyone who has a passing knowledge of Lil Wayne or Tyler or any of these people, they know their product. So I'm amazed that these corporate – well, I really shouldn't say I'm amazed, but I'm appalled that these corporations would even align themselves with these minstrels. It's not about this. It's because they have a pulse on what's happening, allegedly, a pulse of what's happening with today's youth, and that's all that counts. So they need to be strung up as well. They play it innocent when they say, oh, we didn't know, we're going to pull this guy from our wares. But no, you didn't care. These guys have had sponsorships for a number of years now. They got caught this one time. So, you know, why are you aligning your product with these minstrels? because you don't care. You don't care. You don't. You never do. These guys never do the research. It's not even about that. What will the bottom line be if we connect ourselves to this minstrel? That's what it is. What's the bottom line? And I'm sick of it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sick of it. Something has to change. All right, going to a new groove. Janelle Monáe, Erykah Badu, Queen, new groove. We'll be right back. Once again, this is Afternerd giving you the best of urban alternative music. That was Janelle Monáe, Erykah Badu, Queen. I would suggest, again, to the listening audience, check out the video. It's already got a million plus views. I think it's only been up for a few days. If you go to YouTube, Queen, it's the acronym Queen, Q-U-E-E-N, the acronym Queen. And I'll say this much. First of all, I like Janelle Monáe. I've played her quite a bit on the show. I like what she represents. I like her stage persona. She doesn't really show a lot of flesh, if any. She has this whole, I guess, workman attitude toward performing, which she's actually talked about. That she normally wears a tuxedo. It's very monochromatic. In this video, she has a little bit more flair. And again, you know, you really don't see her body that much under normal circumstances. I'm going to get in trouble here, Captain.
You will. You
but
are.
I have to, did you see? You saw the video, right?
Of course. Erica Badu, baby.
Not just, you know, not just Erica, though.
Janelle
Monae. Ooh, Lord. Janelle Monae has got a body. She's kept it hidden. But I loved her before. I have a whole new look at her now.
Here we go.
Damn Beyonce. Damn Beyonce.
There
this
we go.
Woman, but she's kept, you know, her sensuality is kind of a smoldering one.
Yes.
You know, as I said, I knew she's a cute little thing, but, you know, she gave us a little glimmer of what her body looks like. After this video, I'm going to after our show, I'm going to look at that video again. Incidentally, Captain, just to reacquaint myself with the talent. But wow. That's all I got to say. Wow. Something. All right, folks, again, after featuring Captain Kirk, we're at the midway point already. The call-in number, if you'd like to join us and chop it up, is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I want to talk about this deal in Italy, Captain. It's very troubling, very disheartening. The opposite end of the minstrel spectrum, definitely on the opposite end of the minstrel spectrum. And it would normally be a blue area segment, wouldn't it? It would normally be one. But now we have to – it's attached to racism, blatant racism. I'm talking about Cecily Yenge. I believe that's the pronunciation of her name. Cecily Kayenge or Yenge. She was recently nominated as a member of the Italian cabinet. She's the first black Italian cabinet member. She's from the Congo originally. The woman is – an esteemed, highly accomplished doctor, actually. And the Prime Minister, Enrico Letta, named her the Democratic Integration Minister. So she has this cabinet position. And we talked about Jason Collins the last show, about how he had to disclose his sexuality, as if we were asking. I don't want to just lambaste the gentleman. I have respect for Mr. Collins. I have respect for him. I just have a problem with the whole. I don't think I even talked about this, Captain. I might want to mention this briefly. I just have a thing with gay folks having to announce the sexuality. I mean, the actual announcing of it. I don't get that. Just be gay at this point. Just as I am hetero. I don't announce I'm heterosexual. I just do heterosexual things, like talk about. The beauty is Janelle Monae. I'm not going to announce that. So the announcing part is what's problematic to me. That is getting tired. And it's not about being anti-gay or anything like that. It's not about that, Captain. It's the histrionics and the announcement. That's an issue. Just do you. Be yourself. Just be instead of saying it. Anyway, I'm tying it to this new... And kudos to her. She's definitely it's a historical moment. It should be noted. But as soon as this woman, who is an eye surgeon, ladies and gentlemen, she's an eye surgeon from the Congo. She's married to an Italian gentleman. She's very much part of Italian society. And now, because of her accomplishments, because of her cognition, she rightfully so became a member of the cabinet. They have a parliamentary system in Italy. She's a member of the cabinet. Just on sight. She didn't say, hey, I'm black, I'm African. She didn't say that. They saw that. Now all kinds of racial insults have been levied against this highly accomplished black woman. So as much as I might think about how backward the Americas can be, and I'm very pro-European. We've been told for decades, that black folk had it better going to Europe. Might have to take that back. We saw that in Sergio Mims, again from Shadow and Act, he had a brief piece recently on one of my heroes, Paul Robeson. Robeson went to London, went to England because of the racism here. We've seen many artists and people of note. James Baldwin's another one. Folks that were just impeccable backgrounds, highly talented, extremely accomplished individuals that happened to be of color. They couldn't make it in the States. They had to go overseas. Now, this woman who's from Africa, from the Congo, an eye surgeon, mind you, she's being called, you know, the whole monkey thing. Someone used the term bonga bonga. We have a bonga bonga in the, you know, bonga bonga government. I mean, we saw that and we still continue to see it with our president now, that a Harvard-trained attorney, someone who is a constitutional law professor, all these accomplishments, and it's still the monkey business. I mean, when does this get tired? Even when people try to be coy in this country, Captain, when they pretend, or how can I put this, when they're trying to imitate the Obamas, whether it's Michelle Obama or our president, they will go into a stereotypical dialect. I'm like, okay, these are Harvard-trained attorneys. How in what universe, whether it's the Marvel Universe, Captain, or the Star Wars universe, what universe would a Harvard-trained person speak that way? But they do it anyway. They do it because of tribalism. They do it because of racism. And I'm sick of it. So, it's unfortunate, but now we see the world thinks of us in a certain way, even when you are accomplished. But you still have to fight these people. And she also has dealt with these barbs with a lot of grace. A lot of grace, a lot of intelligence, a lot of class, which you would expect someone of her caliber to do. But it just goes to show you that you get it from both sides. We have to deal with the minstrels. You have to deal with lower-tier whites and racists. You can't win. That is the true tragedy of a educated black person. That is what we have to contend with. You're hated. You're called bougie by your quote-unquote brothers, and you're called the N-word or monkey or bonga-bonga by these lower-tier white folk. Any thoughts, Captain?
Well, you know, when it comes to power, positions of power, tribalism kicks in all over the world. Let's take China, for example. How do you think China would react if a black person was in a position of that kind of power in China? All right? How do you think they would react to a white person? They wouldn't react the same way to the white person, but I believe they would have a problem with the white person being in that position of power there in China. Now, if it was a black person, forget about it, probably. Now, I'm just speculating. We don't know until it happens, speculation. They probably all hell would break loose over there. You have to understand how they perceive black people across the world, around the world, looking from the outsider's perspective in. This is how they see black people. They see black people in this perspective. You run. You jump. You sing. You dance. You also commit a lot of crimes. They do not show the things that are happening in the inner sanctum. They do not show that. They do not show that. We know that because we're looking from the inside out. But they're looking from the outside in. And that's how they perceive you. Now, all of a sudden, you take a black person who's highly educated, and then you put them in a position of power. They do not detach themselves from what we consider the menstrual behavior. They still see them somewhat as a menstrual, even though this black person is an individual. All of us are individuals. I'm different from AfroNerd. AfroNerd is different from the Captain. But we interact synergistically to take the show to a higher level. Individuals that they do not see. So they bracket black people into one little sector and just say, this is who you are. Why am I going to let this who you are person into a position of power? Why is she there? Why is he there? Why is Obama there? Even though you're highly educated, you're a highly accomplished individual. That's what they see. They cannot separate the two. And being Italy's history, it's going to be a while before they even get to the level where it's actually like here in America. And America still has a long way to go. Just as the great Afro-Nerd just mentioned, all the shots that are taking, that are constantly being shot at our president, Mr. Obama, still has a long way to go. Just because of skin color, no other reason. So that's my perspective on it, Afro-Nerd. Back over to you.
Yeah, as our friend Michael from YouTube would say, it is what it is. That's his tagline. You know, but it is something that is upsetting. I'm thinking of the Condoleezza Rice story I heard from New York Daily News columnist Stanley Crouch. Stanley Crouch, who actually, if you read any of his columns, very much in line with how we think. And he told him a story of, I believe, a friend of his who went to China, or might have been a friend of Chinese descent, who talked about being in the company, being in some restaurant or something. I think this was in the States, but it was an establishment that was frequented by highly educated, well-to-do Chinese folk. And they had, again, these are folks that are educated, but when a black person of note comes on screen, I mean, like I think in the case of Condoleezza Rice, they would say things like, well, why would Bush have her there? You know, she looks dirty. You know, it doesn't play well. This is anecdotal. This is what he said in his column. But they would say some very disparaging things about, again, Condoleezza Rice, incredibly articulate, incredibly accomplished, provost at Stanford, was and now is. I believe she has a gig with, is it ABC or CBS? Of course, she was the former Secretary of State as well as the National Security Advisor. I mean, this woman, you know, she's fluent in Russian history. I mean, an amazing educator, academician, and intellect. All they saw was a dirty black woman. And dirty in the sense of, well, her skin tone. I mean, it's very, very base perceptions people have. You know, everyone is supposed to be light-complected. What is that? Very strange, man. You know, if your skin is darker, it has a whole bunch of weird connotations for some people. I'm talking about just the actual primitive perception of blackness. We're not even talking about, you know, stereotypes. We're talking about just how people feel with the phenotype of black people. The physicality of black people is still very threatening to some folks. And all I can think of, you're a primitive, incredibly primitive person. I don't think of any – I wish I could get into the mind of someone who has that kind of lower register thinking, Captain. I'm so beyond that. Maybe it's thank God I've read comic books and Star Wars and all that kind of stuff, because you do think for the future. As a futurist, I can't understand how someone could get to that point where they still just physically – the physical attributes of a black person on some level for some people, even folks that allegedly have educations. She's dirty. Black, you know, the black skin is dirty to them. Incredible. It's incredible. And this is why I have a problem with minstrelsy, because it's the flip side of the coin. It's making life unbearable. You know, in the sense of you have the minstrels to contend with, Captain, and then you have the racist and folks that have primitive precepts. You're stuck in the middle. Literally, you're stuck in the middle. All right. I think we might have time for one more groove. And then, well, there's always more to discuss. Actually, you know what? I want to talk about the recent U.S. jobs report numbers. But I might want to talk about briefly Antoine Dodson.
Okay.
One man comes out, one man goes in.
That's a slippery slope right there.
Well,
but I'll unpack it. No problem.
Yeah, please. I mean, you know, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. All right. This is Public Enemy, another classic group. Everything, Everything by Public Enemy. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
I got no fancy car, never was no superstar. Got no Grammy trophy, got no problem if y'all approach me. Never had no Rolling Stone cover, never had no top 10 hit my Brussels. Got no TV show, got no Maybach Benz or Rolls. Got no movie roles, got no platinum or gold. Got no diamond rings, watches, and all them things. Got no way to plane, what I mean is got no private jet. But I also got no regret, got no swag, what I got no love for something I never had.
Got it all.
You know this.
Nothing's changed. Still the same.
We got your help.
We got your help.
Got
I'm telling you.
Got no mansions, restaurants. I got no yacht. Well, I got no choice but to show y'all what some of us forgot. Never was hot, never was pop. But I never ever stopped that real hip hop. Got no paparazzi. Got no company that got me. Walking alone in the hood, so it's easy to spot me, y'all. Got no million follower friends on Twitter, on Facebook, look at my friends. Got no thing for video games, got no shame, saying I ain't never playing. Got no hate for things that are great, don't you know I salute you. Y'all probably got the same thing. Look at your loved ones. Look at your young ones.
I'm telling you.
If you got the old ones around, love them, talk to them, hug them, love them. Damn right.
Give you the best from Strong Island. That was Public Enemy, Chuck D's outfit, everything, everything. All right, folks, again, we got about 9 minutes remaining. This is Afternoon. This is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number still 646-915-9620. I want to talk briefly about Antoine Dotson. I hate to – oh, Jesus, another minstrel. What is it? I might as well call this minstrel.com or something. I don't really like talking about minstrelsy, but I guess his latest – admission is interesting, considering it comes a week after Jason Collins' admission, but it's of the opposite side of the spectrum. Mr. Collins, noted, now noted, I should say, we didn't know him before, but now noted basketball basketball player, athlete. He has come out as a gay male. And now with Antoine Dotson, for those who I would doubt you don't know who Antoine Dotson is, that's the frightening thing is, Antoine Dotson is perhaps one of the most prolific internet meme artists out there. You know, he's one of these project residents that allegedly his sister he thwarted his sister from becoming raped. But the way he spoke at a news conference, when, you know, one of these deals where you put a news a microphone in front of someone and they sound wacky. So because of his wackiness, they were able to actually make this internet song. And then from that point on, he has become somewhat of a celebrity. A celebrity, he has his own wiki page. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page, Captain. It's quite involved. All this business ventures and the success of him being a internet meme. We know who he is. Once we know your name, it's already been said. So they had this auto-tune song on him, the Bed Intruder song. And that became this highly popular thing. So anyway, Antoine Dotson, because of stereotypical mannerisms, one would have construed that he was gay. And I believe that he admitted that he was gay. Now, he has said that he no longer is gay. He renounces homosexuality. He wants to have a wife and a family. So what does that mean? You know, this is something that I suspect the gay community, they hate this stuff. When someone who was a centerpiece of the gay community renounces it and no longer wants to be that, it flies in the face of the whole gay thing being part of your DNA. He just doesn't want that lifestyle. I think he joined up with some religious outfit. That's part of the reason also. I forgot, what is it, Cap? You know, the ones that speak out there on 42nd Street? The Black Israelites.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe he joined the Black Israelites, so that might be problematic within itself. Nevertheless, on his Facebook page, he renounces the lifestyle. He wants a wife and a family. On the other side of the spectrum, coincidentally, last week, Jason Collins comes out and says, I want that lifestyle. One guy renounces it, the other guy pronounces it. What's the deal here?
Well, okay, the first thing that I'm going to say, I'm not here to say which lifestyle is better than the other. Let's get that clear. I'm not here from that perspective. I'm not here to do that at all, whether heterosexual or being gay is better or being heterosexual is being better. Let's make that clear. I'm not here to do that. The reason why this is a bit of a slippery slope is because there are 1 billion Christians worldwide. That's what they say the number is, 1 billion of them. And the Christians will say, okay, you're not born this way. It is a spirit that comes along and turns the man into a homosexual. That within itself is a slippery slope. Also, so what turned all these Catholic priests into homosexuals? Was it a spirit, or were they born that way? You see? You start playing those two dynamics. Now, we know all of these men, particularly you black men, when you go into prison, and they run the line, gay for the stay. That's the line that's being run, gay for the state. You know what I'm talking about. Ones of you that were in there longer than 2 years, you know what you're doing in there, gay for the state. That is learned behavior. Those individuals were not born that way. They know that. So you see, it's a real slippery slope because a lot of homosexuals will say that they were born this way. Little Johnny was born this way. You have some people that turn around and say they were turned out. They got turned on to the lifestyle. So then you have learned behavior. You could play it back and forth. I don't know. I don't know which one it is. But it makes for an interesting argument, an interesting debate.
you might be able to show both ways. Who knows? Maybe these two things have to sit in the world together. That's the reason why they're homosexual. Now, I'm not here to say whether or not that's a bad thing or not. But I just point out the facts. It's a slippery slope because there are a billion Christians worldwide. They don't like that from that perspective. They want it to be a spirit. And also, you have certain factions in the homosexual community that will say, no, you have to be born this way. I didn't choose this lifestyle. Hey, you see? You see? I don't know. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Pardon the pun, Captain, but I think we will never get a straight answer. We will never get a straight answer on this thing. I would suspect it's a harrowing experience. I will say this much also. I think I said it before. It's not the lifestyle that someone would willingly go into. There's got to be some element of difficulty in the sense that no one would want to take that abuse if they were joking around with it. But the origins of it, I don't think it's going to be clear. So I think folks are real about what they are at the moment. We will see if young Master Dodson is able to maintain this proclamation. That'll be interesting. But I will say I have seen this before where some of these guys and gals are just tired of it. It's a very troubling proposition to have that, to be in that lifestyle. It's a very difficult life to lead. And at some point, some of these folks say, you know what? I want to have a normal existence. So, listen, shouting out Antoine Dodson, let's see what happens. You know, either way, whatever makes it happy, but I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the gay community treats him now, because they're going to see him as if he's doing some kind of he's a Benedict Arnold, as opposed to just doing what he feels. Maybe he feels in his heart he doesn't want to live that way. So I think that has to be respected as well. I think it has to be respected. All right, listen, we needed to talk about the latest jobs report, the unemployment numbers, and the black community. So we're going to pick that up on Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen. It's been real. It's always real. We'll do it again next week. Enjoy yourself. Let's groove to Black Star, Fix Up. See you on Wednesday.
Brilliant. Nice. Nice level. Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Fix up, look sharp, yo. How I resolve me, I'm mind involved. A lot of cats talk live, they ain't live at all. Sideline chat, hush when it's time to ball. Said you was charging all, I'm surprised it's all. You can have 1,000 rhymes, 1,000 dimes, the house to shine. Coops on the routes recline. Me on Greenwich Mean, Beach Street, I'm out some time. But weigh it up, do your pound, when ain't an ounce of mine. Get down for mine, air she ain't ground for mine. Y'all seen so clear, true pronounced divine. Pull down your blind, shade don't out my shine. Everything from Bangkok to Bucktown is mine. Say Black Star, great things sprout to mine. Full moons and starry nights, new life and true light. Desert plains and ancient names, cinematic classic frames. Beautiful and fantastic things, like peace, equality. I lost, see everything, don't call it a comeback. I was home anyway, ain't missed a measure for all the time I've been away. Traveler man that carry home with me every day. Bay, slim body, push heavy weight. Fix up, look sharp, elevate.
Yeah.
I don't mean Copperfield, David Blaine. We on solid ground and far above the clouds, Black Star.
The wait is over, or is it overweight? The game is loaded, there's no escape. They substandard, some standard. We got the great names, they got the love handles. We slam it down, trip the back. Shit it down with all that, shit it check. We talking this and that, trip it down.
got my name in your mouth, spit it out, son. The music's so powerful, use it to see the power of. I can make it rain, but I make a plane in a mouth. I'm just black star, baby, powder fresher than a talcum. Yup, keep it charged up, yup, we good with or without the plug. I doubted you, but you still hate you, wow, I'm proud of you. Committed to your cause, and it's caused you to be a sourpuss. Ain't a number that can measure your level of cowardice. Your power puff, you pale in comparison, don't get out enough. Turn up the motherfuckers and speakers, they're nearly loud enough. Black star rocking it, Shaka will be proud of us. You had enough, but callous and shallow and narrow-minded us. Preparing for the battles, the shadows is where you're finding us. You're trying to bust, you said you're synthetic as a designer drug. The populace is ignorant, thank you for reminding us. To separate myself from these rappers who hustle back with you. They got zero property, like the laws of algebra.
Hey, Rick Sharp, look sharp. Black star, good God. And when the sky looks dark, shine light, look ahead, look up. Fix up, look sharp, black star, good God. And when the sky gets dark, shine light, look ahead, look up.
Malcolm X, Shamali Marla, word of God, and works of art.
Portrait of the brain, another unexplained phenomenon.
Shut down, Babylon.
Smash on automaton.
Limbo beats.
Got him feeling geek like a Comic Con.
Far from the hearty heart.
More like a tomahawk.
Rocket launch, I leave right cross, not they chop us off.
Wiley and Mr. Bane.
Fresh now from Concentrate. Looking very sharp today.
Thank you, brother Dr. Shane.
Craft working, born in German engineering.
And all the frequencies that don't adhere to interference.
Flashes of the spirit.
Seekers of the clearance.
Say the tongue is the mirror of the heart.
Look, in that window is a freedom fighter's ransom.
Fixed up, looking sharp, automatic hands on look. Parade caravan,
diplomat degenerate.
Messiah,
pariah,
the leader of the syndicate.
Peace treaty written in
loophole penmanship.
Same road, two sides.
Palaces and tenements. Dispossessed native tongue, noble, open, lonely heart.
Peel apart,
come together,
come together.
Peel apart, come together.
Fixed up, look sharp. Black star, good God. And when the sky looks dark, shine light, look ahead, look up. Fix up, look sharp, black star, good job. And when the sky gets dark,
shine light, look ahead, look up.